for the meeting of the Senate Education Committee. Today is Friday, March 2nd, and the time is 8 a.m. In attendance are Co-Chair Meyer, Vice Chair Davis, Senator Stevens, Senator French, and myself, Senator Thomas. We have a quorum to conduct business. Welcome, everyone. First, is there anything to come before the committee before we get on with our regular agenda? Seeing nothing. We have two items of business before us today. We're going to finish our public testimony and discussion of SB 120, Parents as Teachers, sponsored by Senator French, and we're going to start hearing SB 197, a grant program for schools. On Wednesday, we started public testimony for SB 120. We did not close public testimony, so we'll take up where we left off on Wednesday with a couple of people that did not get the opportunity to testify, and at least one of them is in the room this morning. Two actually are here this morning, and I think, do we have anyone online at this point? No. Okay. All right. We'll start with Emily Cote. You wanted to testify and did not get the opportunity Wednesday, so please come forward, put yourself on the record, state your affiliation, and give us your testimony.
Good morning. My name is Emily Cote, and I work for AEYC, which is the Association for the Education of Young Children. And I work as the Parents of Teachers Coordinator here in Juneau. We are, I think, maybe one of the newest Parents of Teachers program. We just started up in October with funds from the Alaska Children's Trust, Best Beginning, Thread, and United Way. And within 3 weeks, we were completely full in the program. We've held a steady, maintained a steady waiting list ever since then. I know you guys have heard a lot about Parents as Teachers and how great it is, so I just wanted to come and thank you for your continued support and let you know that some of the things that we're already seeing in our program is that since it's strength-based, it applies to all different types of family structures. We have single families, two-parent households, all socioeconomic statuses, families with first-time parents and with parents with additional children. And since it helps parents understand the behavior and what's behind it developmentally wise, we see a lot more patience for some of the more trying things that you might see throughout the first 3 years of life. And we're also seeing the ripple effect where we're only able to access, right now, 17 families is what we have on our program. And what we're hearing is that parents are sharing the information they're learning in baby groups and with their friends with kids. And so it's really neat because you may not be able to touch every single family, but they're gaining more confidence in what they know and what they see that's working, and so they're sharing it with other families. So it truly is an amazing program, but don't just take my word for it. We put together some testimony. I don't know if you guys have the sheet yet. But there's some comments from parents that are, just a few parents that are in our program and things that they love about it the most. So thanks for your continued support, and have a great day.
Thank you for your testimony.
Mr. Chairman.
Any questions? Yes, Senator
Lewis.
Yes,
I have a question.
Go right ahead.
Thank you. Parents as partners, as I support the program, and not question what you're doing. And you said you had 17 people at this time, and I guess if you had more money, you could expand it. But I'd like for you to tell me, where else are you getting your resources other than the grants that you receive from the organization that you learn and what you might receive from us?
Well, through the chair.
Put yourself on the record each time. That keeps the record clear anyhow.
Got it. This is Emily with the Association for the Education of Young Children. Well, our funding, we sought independent funding sources because we weren't able to secure any funding last year because the bill didn't pass. So we were supported through Best Beginnings, Alaska Children's Trust, and then United Way and Thread. And that was kind of the base of our funding for this year.
I was wondering what other resources would you be called upon to have the money? I know you're looking forward to this bill to pass, and maybe there might be some grant money that might come to you. Mm-hmm. But if it spread across to other organizations or groups also, you wouldn't have that much. So what's your operational money? Where do you get it?
Well, we leverage a lot of funds through different partnerships, and we're able to pull together more funds that way. But we are a nonprofit, so that's kind of what we do, is gather money from elsewhere as well.
And are you doing anything to spread the word out to other church groups and other organizations that might have a lot of kids might be eligible for your program, so they would know that that program exists?
Right,
and
right.
Seek funding from some of those organizations, maybe?
Right. Right now, our biggest problem is that we're completely full, and so we've done absolutely no advertising for the program because we can't take on any more people. So the hope would be that we'd be able to hire at least one other home visitor and be able to take in more families that way.
If you were able to hire one more home visitor, how many children would you be able to add into your program?
Well, right now we have 17 families but about 21 children. So ideally another home visitor would be able to take in about 20 families as well. And so at least 20 children. A lot of families have multiples though. So.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions? Hearing none, thank you for your testimony. And we have only one person online, or is that correct? Just one coming in? Okay. Let's see. We have Abby Hensley signed up to testify this morning. Abby, if you'd please come forward, put yourself on the record and your affiliation, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you and good morning. My name is Abby Hensley. I'm Executive Director for Best Beginnings. And Best Beginnings, as I think most of you know, is a statewide advocacy initiative to help ensure that all children in Alaska can come to school ready for the challenges of school and be prepared for what comes beyond. And thank you very much for allowing me to share some information with you this morning. And as Emily said, I too want to thank you for your support for education in general, but certainly your support for education and learning for our very littlest citizens. And at Best Beginnings, we do believe that parents are a child's first teacher. You may have seen last year a television spot that we ran with Martin Boozer, in which he talks about it all starts in the puppy pen. And I think it does all start in the puppy pen. And this year, I know that many of you have seen the new Babies on Track DVD and the accompanying baby board books. And this is about brain development, and it's about all those everyday activities that parents can do with their children with virtually everyday materials. And I sort of feel like this Babies on Track is really an introduction for families to parents as teachers, because it really sets the stage for all of that about brain development, about early literacy, about all the kinds of things that children need to be successful. And to get the most benefit from something like Babies on Track, certainly adding home visiting would do that. The home visitors in parents as teachers, as I think you've heard from others, are certainly well-trained. It's a very rigorous set of requirements that programs need to have in place that the home visitors need to meet. And now we have in-state trainers, which makes adding to the cadre of trained home visitors even easier. We don't have to import trainers. We've got them right here. And there already is in place a very vigorous, I think, state network of parents as teachers programs, so that there are connections among all of them. For example, when Juno wanted to start a parents as teachers program, they didn't have to make it up. They knew who they could turn to, they could get advice from others, and they could get the training and be on their way. I serve on the state advisory group for parents as teachers, and so have a firsthand look at the professionalism of the whole program and of the home visitors themselves. For many years, I've been a personal advocate of parents as teachers, and now I'm able to see through this advisory group some of the new rules and regulations that are coming down, some of the new requirements for the home visitors. It's really becoming a much more, I think, rigorous is the right word to use, way of training people so that when they are visiting families and they're coming into their homes in a very, really an intimate way, that they have all the tools at their disposal that they need in order to ensure that they interact appropriately with families and that families learn to trust them. It's like a trusted friend who comes to visit, but it's also a trusted friend who knows a lot and can share that information with the families. Now, parents as teachers is not, the program that works. I know many of us are looking for that to say, what is it that we should, one thing that we should invest in our state that will do the trick for every family and every child? And, there just isn't one. But parents as teachers is an important part of what is available on a wide spectrum. Everything from very intense intervention that's needed for some children, all the way to something like Imagination Library, which is, you know, is very much less expensive, but it also is a book and some activities. So it's there's a wide range of what we should be looking at. And just as the Early Childhood Partnership here in Juneau knew, they knew best what their children needed here and how to find that. And so Parents as Teachers was something that they chose based on what the children in this community needed, what the families needed, and how they could figure out how to provide that. We all have one goal, and that is to see that children come to school ready, that they have what they need to be successful. And we know there are many ways to get there. Now, just as Juneau did here, Kodiak has looked at Parents as Teachers and is taking it on in a little different way. They received one of only two, I think, federal grants to do some a home visiting program. And after, you know, going through a lot of review of programs, they chose Parents as Teachers. And so that will be looked at in a very, I think, close way to see how that Parents as Teachers program fits in with what they're doing there in Kodiak. I hope that you know that the new Alaska Early Childhood Coordinating Council has seven priorities that they came up with, and that information was presented to you all a few weeks ago. And one of those priorities is to see that an additional 5,000 children receive services. So certainly this fits well with that priority. And also, for I think the fourth year, Best Beginnings has joined with four other organizations to come up with a set of priorities for this legislative session. And Parents as Teachers is a part of that list of priorities as well. So this is something that, you know, we've been talking about for a long time that I'm pleased to see that you're taking up and hope that you will move it forward. Thank you very much.
Thank you for your testimony. Do we have any questions? Senator French.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Good morning. It's sensitive. Nice to see you here. You're probably one of the leading early childhood development advocates in the state. And I don't know if you've had a chance to review the backup material we put together for this bill, but there was included, and all the members have this, a study by the RAND Corporation looking at the proven benefits of early childhood interventions, a RAND study that listed Parents as Teachers as one of the programs it examined. There's also a legislative research report. I guess I really want to ask you about the legislative research report, comparing and contrasting Head Start versus Parents as Teachers. The research report said that Parents as Teachers costs about $3,000 per family to administer, whereas Head Start was somewhere between $8,000 and $12,000 per child, substantially more expensive. Could you maybe just compare and contrast Parents as Teachers versus pre-kindergarten and how they go together and what one does and the other doesn't do and so forth?
Through the chair, Senator French, when you said contrast Parents as Teachers with pre-kindergarten, you had referred earlier to Head Start.
Well, I'm thinking of Head Start is in its role as a provider of pre-kindergarten services.
They're very different programs. They are very complementary. In fact, in some communities, I think Parents as Teachers sort of serves children from birth to three, and then children might go to a Head Start program. I think that looking at community by community, there are some communities in which a pre-K program or a Head Start program is absolutely what the community wants and needs, and they have the children to support a center-based program. In other communities where there are many fewer children, for example, certainly a Parents as Teachers program would be appropriate rather than saying there's no service available because there aren't enough children. So I think that they're different programs, certainly. Both of them have a requirement for parent engagement, which is a major component of ensuring that children get what they need when they get to school, and also that parent engagement throughout the school years also has proven to have greater success with children.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Mark.
Well, Ms. Hensley, thank you very much for the lunch and learn yesterday. That was very educational, very enlightening, and I know several members here were at that. I guess one concern I have is there like one central location or one that is kind of serves as an umbrella for all these different programs who can do, you know, what you said is that, okay, this village probably needs parents as teachers. There's not enough for a Head Start program, or this area needs, you know, to start a pre-K program like Senator Davis is recommending, because it's a more urban area and they have a lot of kids and they could implement it through their school system. Is that something that you would think that maybe the state DED ought to be as the central person or department to make that decision, or who should make that decision?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer. That's really a very interesting point, it sounds almost like a clearinghouse. And the sort of the kind of thing that if you're looking for this result, you may consider these programs. If you're looking for that result, perhaps these programs. I know that my colleagues at the department are pretty full, I think that your idea of having kind of a central location just for information is a very good one. Those of us among the early childhood, in the early childhood community, certainly have communication with each other. There's no one entity that has taken that up. It may be something that the Alaska Early Childhood Coordinating Council could look to see that there is at least some place where people could go to say, here is the variety of programs and services that could be available to families with young children.
Mr. Chair?
Certainly.
Thank you. And I believe, if I recall, you serve on that council, correct? Yeah. That would be something maybe the council could make a recommendation as to, you know, maybe THRED is the organization to serve as the clearinghouse. But I think we as an appropriating body, we need to know that wherever the funds are going for all these different programs, that there isn't, that they're being efficiently used, there isn't duplication, there isn't... you know, some areas that really that's not the right program. Somebody we can hold accountable. And again, if it's not DED, then, you know, what group would that be?
Senator Thomas, to follow up with that, I know that part of what the Coordinating Council is doing is gathering together information about all the programs that currently exist with an inventory of what is out there. Part of what the council is doing now, too, is trying to gather information on where there are wait lists, for example, so that we know if there are lengthy wait lists for Head Start, for example, you know, how do we direct resources there? If there are, I don't mean the council directing resources, I mean all of us together. But there is certainly an effort to gather information about what we already have and have it in one place, so that I think would be a good start to then helping communities figure out what they want to do. For example, you know, do we need three different home visiting programs in one community? You know, how do we help to coordinate that kind of thing so that we do use resources as efficiently and effectively as you've said?
Okay, very good. Ms. Chairman, just one more follow up. So your final recommendations scheduled for this summer, was it June 1st or?
Please continue.
Senator Meyer, the strategic report is due to the governor and the legislature, I believe, at the end of June.
Okay. Well, good. I for one, and I think I speak for the whole body or committee, look forward to seeing that report, and we may have to regroup here over the interim to kind of look over and discuss your recommendations that the council makes. Thank you.
Senator Thomas, I know that there's always a lot to be done in the interim, and as this is an election year, it may be even more difficult, but certainly those of us who are in this early childhood world would very much welcome an opportunity to have a greater conversation, more extensive conversation with you all as we move forward, so that we have more opportunity really to talk about these issues in depth instead of when we kind of get here and you all are busy with lots of things, but that we might be able to together pay closer attention to ensure that really all of our youngest children get what they need.
Thank you for that. And Senator Myers hit the nail on the head. You know, we do need to try and make sure that there's efficient use of resources, and you have, and through the various organizations, have a better opportunity to discuss the realities and who fits into what situations, and so we don't duplicate. And that would be very helpful for us, because when we're making the decisions, they may not be as well informed as those that that are dealing with it on the ground, and I think that's extremely important for people to put forth what they think is the best opportunities, and that's exactly what we're looking for. And I know that sometimes that's difficult, because we talk about, you know, somebody has to move aside or whatever, or merge with others, but we know you guys are up for the task, and we're looking forward to getting that information, and more than willing to meet with you in the interim and discuss what your findings are and how we move that forward. So we thank you for your testimony this morning, and thank you for your involvement.
Thank you very much.
Is there anybody else in the room to here to testify on SB 120? I don't have anybody signed up at this point, so we do have online Dr. Norm Eck, Superintendent of Northwest Arctic, who was signed up to testify on Wednesday but didn't get that opportunity. So if Mr. Eck is online, please put yourself on the record and start with your testimony. We apologize for not having the opportunity available for you on Wednesday.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody. For the record, I'm Dr. Norman Eck, Superintendent of Northwest Arctic Borough School District. We have 1,950 students in 12 schools in our 11 villages. None of our villages are accessible by roads, and all supplies have to be flown in. I've been employed in the Northwest Arctic for 14 years, 1 year as a director, 6.5 years as a principal, and I'm in my 7th year as superintendent. I appreciate this opportunity to speak with you today, and I want to thank Abby Hensley for her excellent testimony this morning, and to thank her for all the great work she does for early learning through Best Beginnings. And the points that she shared are very, very important for us all to keep in mind. Now, we know that there is no silver bullet to the woes of underachievement on the part of students in our schools. But as a superintendent, if I could have one thing and one thing only that could be done, and those parents are ready to take on the responsibility for early learning, that one program would be Parents as Teachers. In Northwest Arctic, we are working through Best Beginnings to establish early learning opportunities in our region. Why? Because parents are the child's first teacher and the most important and influential teachers the child will ever have. The child is formed in these early years, and the teaching the child has likely will determine the success the child will have later in life. If a learning problem isn't handled right away, years of costly remediation may or may not help make the correction. Closing the achievement gap can be much more effectively attained through early learning methodologies than many, many years of remediation after the third grade. For parents who are not ready or able to take on the Parents as Teachers program, we need two-year kindergarten for the 4- and 5-year-olds. Intentional learning, early childhood education, is a must for children who otherwise come to school 2 years behind in the precognitive areas of pre-reading and pre-numeracy. And that's the average that we have in Northwest Arctic. I want to give an example from my own family that illustrated to me the value of the principles of the Parents as Teachers program. My wife is currently an art teacher at Cottsview High School. We have 2 adopted children from Calcutta, India. Landon is now 18, and he'll be graduating this May. Amber is 16 and a sophomore. She's a youth leader on student council and active in science fair and other high school activities. She's a student who loves school. 17 years ago, we were preparing the paperwork to adopt our second child from the International Mission of Hope in Calcutta. 3 weeks after our daughter, Amber, was born, we learned about her, and she was preliminarily assigned to us for adoption. Then we received the medical report that stated she had cerebral palsy. Not really knowing much about cerebral palsy, I researched all I could about the condition. Cerebral palsy is most commonly caused by the infant having a stroke as it's being born. Emily arrived to us from India. She was 11 months old by the time she came. The effects of the cerebral palsy did not seem obvious to us, but we were determined to do all we could for her. We immediately began to work with her spatially, visually, and kinesthetically with patients and activities that we know now are elements of the Parents as Teachers program. My wife stayed home and did not teach for 2 years in order to work with Ember. Medical tests in the years since have shown that there were no lasting effects from the cerebral palsy, and there was little trace of it left. Is this one in a million? I don't know. But I do know that the help that a parent and early childhood education program can bring is tremendous. Today, Ember is a bright, charming young lady, as long as we don't tell her to clean up her room. So I know firsthand how well Parents as Teachers can affect the life of a child. Without the early years of intervention, what problems would or could have lingered with Ember? I don't know. But I can say for sure that working with the elements of the Parents as Teachers program can change a life. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Eck. Do we have any questions of Dr. Eck? Seeing none, thank you very much for your testimony and thank you for your patience.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. We have Melissa Pickle in Eagle River online, I believe.
Yes. Hi, good morning. My name is Melissa Pickle.
Please provide your testimony.
All right. I live in Eagle River, and I have been a court-appointed special advocate, or CASA, for 6 years. A CASA is a trained volunteer that advocates for children who are in state's protective custody. The children I have worked with have experienced neglect and or abuse and have had to be removed from their homes. Today, I want to speak on behalf of the Parents as Teachers program, or PAT. Research has shown that families and children enrolled in the PAT program experience many positive benefits, but I would like to focus on a few of the impacts this program has on parents, particularly on two related to child abuse and neglect. Parents in the PAT program have increased knowledge of child development and positive child-rearing practices and have fewer documented cases of child abuse and neglect. Now I want to repeat that last item. Parents who have received PAT services have fewer documented cases of child abuse and neglect. Alaska has one of the highest rates of child abuse and neglect, with nearly half of the reports of harm involving children birth to five. Now, there are many reasons why children come into custody, and what I have observed in my own experience as a CASA is a lack of parenting knowledge around positive child-rearing practices. I've encountered parents whose disciplinary practices are extremely inappropriate, and they didn't know what else to do. I've seen parents who love their children but don't understand child development, and they have inappropriate expectations for what a young child is capable of doing. Parents who are so frustrated with toilet training a two-year-old that they become violent towards their own child. I've also seen parents whose children are injured because the parents have not appropriately child-proofed their home. And these are all things that the Parents as Teachers program addresses in its work with children and families. The PAT program works with parents to help them understand how children grow and develop. This helps parents to develop appropriate forms of discipline and to have age-appropriate, realistic expectations for their children. Furthermore, having someone to talk to about the stressors related to parenting can help alleviate the stress many parents experience. Parental stress is a known risk factor for child abuse. The PAT program can also connect families to other agencies that can provide additional information and support to the family. The program also provides basic information to parents on how to childproof their home and how to keep their children safe. Abuse and neglect has a tremendous impact on a child's development, particularly for young children birth to five whose brains are still developing. Now, thanks to advances in technology, we can now actually see the differences in the structure of a brain of a healthy child in a normal environment versus that of a child who has experienced severe abuse and neglect. I'm a strong supporter of the PAT program because I've seen what it can do. As you've heard and probably will hear from others providing testimony today, the PAT program has many positive impacts on a child's school readiness abilities, their social-emotional development, and more. But I believe the biggest impact that the PAT program has is in providing parents with the information and skills so parents can keep their children healthy and safe. Now, I thank you for your time and for allowing me to share about my experiences with Parents as Teachers with you today. Thank you.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Pickle. Are there any questions for Ms. Pickle? Seeing none, next next one signed up is Pam Rose, Special Education Heidelberg. Are you with us this morning? Pam Rose?
Good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can. Please put yourself on the record.
Yeah, for the record, my name is Pam Penrose. So the last name is P-E-N-R-O-S-E.
Oh, okay. All right. Sorry about that.
Oh, that's fine. So thank you for the opportunity to speak, and good morning to everyone. I've really enjoyed and been affected by the profound words that came before me, so thank you for that. I've been a special education teacher and coordinator in Heidelberg for 15 years and value my relationship with the Parents of Teachers program. I am grateful that the focus and intent of the program is driven by the needs of the child and the family. Also critical is that the PAT program uses evidence-based practices that meet the state of Alaska's early learning guidelines. The parent component meets a profound need for all families in our community, especially our families in crisis. The two home visits each month allow parents and teacher staff to model teaching techniques for the parents as they engage the children in fun and motivating activities. The group social each month is well attended and provides parents and children a safe and comfortable environment in which to play. Children are given opportunities to develop the motor, social-emotional, language, and problem-solving skills so necessary for school readiness. I am fortunate to have two paraprofessionals who assist students in the general education classroom in kindergarten through second grade. They spend most of their time working with the students who did not attend the Parents of Teachers program. These children began kindergarten without the benefits of learning how to listen to a story, follow directions, and play respectfully with their classmates. Additionally, these paraprofessionals are both young mothers whose children are active participants in the Parents of Teachers program. Based on the information that they receive about healthy births, discipline, temperament, stress, and family-driven problem solving to be extremely advantageous for developing wellness for the whole family. The Parents of Teachers staff is always part of the development of the IEP for students who have been identified with special needs. These students would not have made the substantial gains without the support and expertise of the Parents of Teachers program. I appreciate that PAT's early learning program understands the impact of early learning on school success. Our children need a chance to develop a love of learning and to experience the feeling of success that increases self-esteem and ultimately results in self-efficiency. Please continue to fund this valuable program. Thank you very much.
And thank you for your testimony. Do we have any questions of Ms. Penrose? Seeing none, next is Janet Stone.
Hi, good morning. My name is Janet Stone.
Good morning.
I am an early education consultant for the Lower Yukon School District. I'm a veteran teacher of 30 years with a broad range of experiences, including multicultural, cross-age, all socioeconomic levels, preschool, public school, general and special education. I've been with the Lower Yukon School District for 2 years as a consultant from the pilot preschool program, and I've had the unique opportunity to visit all the 11 villages in the district multiple times. I've worked in the kindergarten classrooms, observed in Head Start programs, visited with teachers and professionals, as well as had direct interactions with the families of the children under the age of 5. The Parents of Teachers program is one way to help bridge the gap between the normally expected developmental experiences of children on the road system and the vastly different experiences of children in rural Alaska. Children in town have the kinds of experiences that are expected and assumed to be the ones children bring to school by most textbook publishers and curriculum developers. However, for children who have never seen cars, trucks, trains, traffic signals, restaurants, signs, and billboards, they have not had the opportunity to explore environmental print or have the kind of language interactions that lead to concept development. parents as teachers and other early intervention and preschool programs are critical in rural Alaska to help bridge the gaps in these cognitive developmental areas. But more importantly, they help raise parents' awareness levels of the need for even more language interactions with their children. Parents are their children's first and most important teacher. And in many of the villages, some of our parents are as young as 17 years old or younger. Some of our average ages are 17 and a half years. So it becomes even more important to have an agency or an organization such as parents as teachers to help develop the successful parents with the skills and abilities that they need to raise successful learners. Often this program is the only access the family has to child development. They can receive reassurance that their child is developing normally or get support if their child is exhibiting areas of concern, as we've heard stated in some of the previous testimony. Most studies show that early intervention is the most critical aspect of education. The more time, attention, and funding that we give getting children started successfully means less need for special education services later, not to mention the cost to society through dropouts, drugs, suicides, and crime, which has been shown to be directly correlated and has been stated here previously. Parents as teachers, early intervention programs, preschools, and the public school settings are all ways that we can help fund the youngest Alaskans find lifelong success. Thank you for your time. And this has been a very enlightening discussion for me to hear.
For us as well, and thank you for your testimony, Ms. Stone. Do we have anybody else online? I think I've exhausted that list. Anybody else in the room care to testify on SB, a committee substitute for SB 120? Seeing none, we want to thank everybody for their comments. And are there any other questions at this point in time? If not, we'd have the department come forward and answer a few questions that are still existing, and also comment on the fiscal note. We have an old fiscal note before us from December, I believe, and was curious to know if we anticipate that the committee substitute with such minor changes would have any great impact on that fiscal note.
Good morning, Chair Thomas, morning. Members of the committee. Cynthia Curran, Director for Teaching and Learning Support, Department of Education and Early Development.
Good morning. Paul Sugar, Department of Education and Early Development.
Good morning.
I believe the question was whether or not the change would have any impact on the fiscal note. And the change was in the dates, so there would be no impact on what our fiscal note was related to the change in the date.
I anticipated that, but I just thought I'd ask just in case, just to make sure. Okay. And Senator Meyer, you had a question that you were wanting to clarify something, I believe?
A couple questions, Mr.
Please,
Chair, if I may.
Please do.
In your fiscal note, how many kids do you anticipate this will affect? I think fiscal note I have is about 3.9 million.
Correct.
Okay. Through the Chair, Senator Meyer, in looking at the fiscal note, we anticipated that approximately 940 families would be impacted by this program, keeping in mind that there may be multiple young children in a family. We took the number of children estimated at 53,000 that were between 1 month and 5 years of age. And the average number of pre-kindergarten children per household is 1.34. And so we came up with 39,000 families, and then used a multiplier of families that might be seeking services and came out with 1,740 families. Then there are already 800 families who are receiving services through federal funding. And so we took those families out and came up with a number of 940 families. So a little over 1,000 children if you use the 1.34 per household.
Mrs. Turman,
I have some more questions.
He's got some more.
I wanted to add on to what you were asking there about this. Could I just...
Go ahead.
Certainly, go ahead. Senator Davis.
Why did you go 0 to 5 rather than 0 to 3? This program is supposed to be for 0 to 3 year old, not 5 year old. 5 year olds go to kindergarten. So why do you have them included in this space?
Through the chair, Senator Davis, kindergarten is voluntary in our state, and so there may be children at home whose parents don't send them to kindergarten, and they would be benefiting from these services also. That's why they're included.
Most likely, if they're not sending their children to pre-K, to K, they're probably not going to send them to this program. I still think it should have been based upon the target group that we are trying to go to, and that's 0 to 3.
Through the chair.
And then we'd be able to serve more children.
Through the chair, Senator Davis, thank you for the clarification.
Senator Meyer.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, thank you. Now, does the department already operate or support any parent as teacher programs?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, yes, we grant funding to Rural CAP for their parents as teachers program, and that's an amount of $300,000.
Okay. If I may
sure, please continue.
How's that been going? Has it been successful? Do you know any results?
Through the chair, Paul Sugar again, Department of Education, Senator Meyer. It has been successful. They are the largest single provider of parent as teachers programs in the state. Our funding allows them to reach 5 additional communities with parent as teachers. Rural CAP also houses the state office for parent as teachers, and a small amount of that $300,000 helps in the running of that state office as well. They serve they hold 92 slots available through the $300,000. So numbers of families will vary depending on how many are involved. And I believe this year to this point, they have served 105 expectant mothers and children. And at this point in time right now, the latest data was 95 children and pregnant women. They've had 10 folks some of the children turned 3 and moved into a Head Start or other pre-K program, and some of the expectant moms have left the program because they have moved from the community.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, if the program works and it's been successful, then this bill should have been originated from you, not us. So, I'm just wondering. I'm assuming you'll support the administration supports this bill because it's a program that works. Does that make sense? I don't want to put words in your mouth.
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, the department believes strongly in the deliberative process that the legislature uses, and so we will work with the legislature to do what needs to be done.
Okay. Thank you. And again, I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but if it works for our kids and gives them a head start or helps them that later down the road could be quite an expense to our state and to society, then I think we should be all over this. And frankly, I don't know if $3 million is the right amount. I don't know if that's the right number of kids. But that's your job, your responsibility. And I think you probably heard my questioning earlier that about is there one central location that's kind of coordinating all these activities to make sure they are successful, make sure people are being held accountable, make sure the money is being spent efficiently. Am I accurate in assuming that would be DED's job and responsibility?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, the department is responsible for making sure that funding is spent in the way that it is supposed to be spent. And so there are accountability measures built into that. If you're talking about the quality of a program, at this point, there are lots of things in place, but I can't speak directly to what the particular measures are for parents as teachers. Do you have anything?
Through the chair, Paul Sugar again, Department of Education and Early Development. Since we began this grant a few years ago as basically a test of state funding for a program that has been receiving primarily federal funding in our state, we worked with the grantee and set 10 particular goal areas, and they do gather data and information, screenings, etc., on children. We saw the presentation, I believe, last time from WorldCap. So at this point, they are not utilizing the exact same tools, say, that a pre-K or a Head Start would use. But I do know that we have been in discussion to arrive to a common tool usage among parents as teachers that receive funding from the state, all Head Starts that receive funding from the state, and should we continue receiving pre-K funding, that they would join in this common tool usage as well.
Okay, and Mr. Chairman, just a final question, and if you want to avoid this question or answer or punt it to the deputy, that's fine. I'm just wondering if this program could assist in the Moore versus State of Alaska settlement, as far as the recommendations that the, I think it was Judge Gleason, was had recommended in that case. Could this be a tool in assisting?
Through the chair, Senator Meyer, I am punting that one to the deputy commissioner.
That's why he gets the big bump. You know, Mr. Chairman, if I can follow up while Deputy Gonzalo there, I think the Moore case did require additional funding for pre-kindergarten kids. I think it was maybe 0 to 5 or. But go ahead.
For the record, my name is Les Morrison, the Deputy Commissioner at the Department of Education Early Development. And the question around the Moore case and its relationship or potential relationship to this program really falls into one of the areas. The case where there was settlement was around pre-K programs, and there was I believe it was $6 million, designed to be $2 million for each of the 3 years of the settlement toward pre-K. And the pre-K programs really have to be generated by the community putting forth what they think will work in their community. My understanding, and I don't have the case right in front of me, but my understanding is we were to target, I thought, four-year-olds. So I don't see that a community couldn't come forward and say part of the funding they want for a Parents as Teachers program would be from those dollars, and then they might have to augment it for the earlier age levels. I can't remember if the Moore case specifically laid out an age level or not. But if it did, then they might have to augment it with other funds. But I certainly think if that's what a community brought forward as their proposal and laid out why that would work, I think that it certainly would fit the Moore settlement.
Okay, thank you.
Just on that point, Senator, I just happened to keep it in my binder, and I'm a big fan of this document. I'm becoming more of a fan all the time. Mr. Morse is right. It is aimed at pre-kindergarten. It talks about four-year-olds and so forth in class, and the programs being conducted. It says the approved program must be standards-based, four-year program designed and implemented to prepare students for school, designed and implemented to involve parents as part of the program, including through the inclusion of parent engagement activities and staff duties. That's the parent as teachers aspect, but I really do think it's probably more fair to read the more cases aimed at a two-year pre-kindergarten conducted by a school district in classrooms.
Any other comments or questions?
Just one last. Did you, in your evaluation for creating a fiscal note, and I realize that you know, tend to err on the high side, and I certainly understand that. I tend to do that myself, so you don't look foolish at a later date. But did you do an evaluation of the potential for remediation, cost of remediation in relationship to how parents as teachers may very well reduce the remediation, or is that just something that was too nebulous of, for you to actually concentrate on?
No, we didn't.
I realize looking at your calculations, it's just numbers, percentages, blank, come up with a number, so.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, you would be correct. We did not factor in a remediation factor. It would be a little hard to figure that out, I think, from what we have here.
Okay. Just thought I'd ask.
If I might add, again, Les Morse, Deputy Commissioner, for the record. The other thing that struck me about the fiscal note and the way that we calculated is if you look at the bill language, it said for students under five. So if you take, there are five cohorts that would be younger than that if you go from birth to one to two, so on up to five. And so I think that we calculated it also compliant with the legislation, the way it's designed, with the language in there saying for cohorts under five, mm-hmm. or for up to five or under five, I think is how it's worded in there.
Mm-hmm. Yes, under five.
Under.
Or under 5 years of age.
Correct. So if you go under five, we would have five cohorts, because you have the birth to one to two, and up to five, you get five cohorts of kids or groupings. So.
Any other?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, Cindy Curran, I don't have anything to add.
Any other questions or comments?
Mr. Chairman, I know we're about to run out of time, and I do want us to move the bill, but I, at some later time, maybe they can come back and answer the questions, and I think we're on the right target, because I'd like to hear from the department telling us what they're doing in early childhood education. I want to know how much money do you have allocated in the present budget for 0 to 3, 0 to 4 age. That's the reason that we changed the name of to DEED, and you're supposed to have the younger children included, and I don't see what we're doing for them, and I would like for you to come and tell me. Could you just tell me briefly if there is any money in there? If we were not offering this bill, would there be any extra money going towards 0 to 3 or 0 to 4 from the department? And you were supposed to be working in combination with the Help the Social Services, the two of you.
Again, for the record, Les Morse, Deputy Commissioner, through the chair, Senator Davis. I don't have the specific numbers, but we can get those to you. But we do have money in our budget that puts forward a state contribution toward Head Start. We do have money that we provide grants out. One, I think it's $300,000, supports the ROCAP and the Parents as Teachers. We have some money also that comes through our budget that goes to Best Beginnings, and then I believe we have some coordination money, and then we work with Health and Social Services and the Early Childhood Coordinating Council, but we'd be happy to give you the specific numbers either through this committee or through the subcommittee that for our finance component so that you can see that.
I'd like for it to come to this committee because everybody don't serve on itself. Okay.
Very good. Anything else? Any other questions? Comments? All right. If there are no other questions or comments, I will remove my objection and ask if there is any further objection or other objection. Thank you to the department for your testimony. If there are any other objections? Hearing none, Senator Meyer, what is the will of the committee?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I believe the will is to move the bill. At least I'll make that motion to do that. I've been convinced that this program works, and if we have a program that actually works, let's exploit it and move it on. So, Mr. Chair, I make a motion that we move the committee substitute for Senate Bill 120, version 27LS0788-M, to the next committee referral with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal note.
Is there objection? Seeing none, the bill passes from committee, and since we only have a few minutes left. We were going to get to SB 197, but I don't think we can adopt the bill and pass it out in 5 minutes. So I think we'll put that off to another.
Well, it is your bill, Mr. Chairman.
Yeah. But I think we probably want to have some discussion on it.
So let's see, next Monday we'll be doing SB 197, which is the bill I just referred to. There'll be no meeting on Wednesday nor Friday. And if there's nothing else to come before the committee, we'll stand adjourned.